Good morning and welcome to News from the Yuma Sun. I'm Marcia French, your volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today is Thursday, September 11th, a day that, as I will tell you in two articles, is a day we should all remember. Some of the articles I'll be sharing in addition are the weather, opportunity to vote for our hero dog, some crime news, obituary notices, sports, and more. I'll start with the weather. From the Weather Channel, today, Thursday, September 11th, 99 degrees for the high, 72 for the low, sunny, no percent chance of precipitation, winds from the west northwest at 8 miles per hour. Friday the 12th, 98 degrees, 71 degrees for the low, sunny, 0% chance of rain, winds from the west northwest at 8 miles per hour. Saturday the 13th, 99 degrees and 73 degrees, sunny, 0% chance of rain, southwest winds at 5 miles per hour. Sunday the 14th, 173 degrees, sunny, 1% chance of precipitation, winds from the south at 8 miles per hour. And on Monday the 15th, the high with a sunny day is predicted to be 101 degrees. First article, remembering the September 11th terror attacks. This article is by Joe Toposti, Sun staff writer from September 9th. Throughout Yuma and its surrounding communities, municipalities, and businesses have raised their flags to half staff in remembrance of the lives lost in the September 11th, 2001 terror attacks. The death toll on that day was just shy of 3,000, with 343 of those lost serving as firefighters and 72 as members of law enforcement. Each year, the Yuma Fire Department places flags remembering the fallen first responders on the lawn of Fire Station 2, located on Avenue A, just south of 32nd Street. The memorial is now up and will be on display until Monday, September 15th. On Thursday, September 11th, at 5 a.m., firefighters, along with residents and community leaders, will be at 350 West 16th Street for the annual stair climb. Firefighters will be wearing their turnout gear and climb the stairs to demonstrate the 110 floors that the fallen firefighters climbed on September 11th, 2001. The Summerton Police Department will hold a memorial service at the city's public safety building at 445 East Main Street at 8 a.m. At 8:15 a.m., St. Francis of Assisi School will host a flag-raising ceremony on its campus, located at 700 West 18th Street. At 6 p.m., the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 1763 will host a remembrance ceremony at their post on 14th Street East off Engler Avenue. Yuma High School will conduct a special 9/11 remembrance at 6:50 p.m. prior to their game. Professional skydiver Jay Stokes will land on the criminals field and present the game ball. On Saturday, September 12th, the Harley Owners Club of Yuma will host its annual 9/11 Memorial Run, with proceeds benefiting the Yuma Child Burn Survivors. Registration for the run will take place at 9 a.m. at Bobby's Territorial Harley-Davidson on Gila Ridge Road. The next article is also by Joe Toposti, Sun staff writer from September 9th, and this is Yuma Firefighter Asks Public Not to Forget. For 24 years, firefighters and volunteers have placed flags on the lawn in front of Yuma's Fire Station No. 2 in remembrance of the 343 firefighters lost on September 11th, 2001. Everyone says they won't forget, but people forget, said veteran firefighter Captain Paul Avancho of the Yuma Fire Department. We're just asking people not to forget. 72 flags have been added to the lawn in remembrance of the police officers who died alongside firefighters that day. First responders ran towards the burning towers while others ran away from them. Ivanko said. We want people to drive by and see the flags and to recognize that each flag was a firefighter. Each fallen brother had a family, said Ivanko. It's important to educate our youth about the attacks, he noted. People forget. It's been 24 years and people do forget. We have firefighters on the job right now that weren't even born yet, and a lot of them were just kids. They heard about it. So this is our pledge not to forget. So when people drive by here, they'll see 343 flags, one for each firefighter that was killed at the World Trade Center. We're a family, and in a single day, entire firehouses were cleaned out. So much loss of life. It happened in New York, but we felt the pain all over the country, Ivanko said. Fire station number 2 is located on Avenue A, just south of 32nd Street. Flags will stay up until Sunday morning. The next article, DHS says it can build border walls regardless of jaguars. This article is by Howard Fischel, Capital Media Services, from September 9th. It's dated Phoenix. The nation's top homeland official says she has the absolute right to build new walls close to 40 miles of the border in southern Arizona, regardless of claims by environmental groups it could lead to elimination of the jaguar in the state. In new filings in federal court, a lawyer for Christy Nem says the 1996 Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act specifically authorizes the Department of Homeland Security to construct physical barriers and roads along the border. More to the point, Alexander Yun says that law enforces and authorizes the secretary to waive any legal requirements to ensure expeditious construction of border barriers and roads. And Yun brushes aside claims by the Arizona Center for Biological Diversity and Catalyst that Congress acted illegally when it amended the law in 2005 to say the head of the agency can waive all legal requirements that each secretary in the secretary's sole discretion determines necessary to ensure expeditious construction of the barriers and roads. Such theories have no credible basis in constitutional jurisprudence, he told U.S. District Court Judge Angela Martinez, and every court to hear such challenges has unambiguously upheld the constitutionality of the statute. But Jean Sue, attorney for the two groups that sued, said that while there may be a basis for the original law, the current version amounts to unbridled and unconstitutional delegation of legislative authority. Hanging in the balance are two stretches of border where NEM has waived all laws. One is a 5-mile stretch from Nogales east. The longer one, more than 33 miles, runs from the Patagonia Mountains to the Coronado National Memorial. The plans include 27 miles of new bollard walls, 30-foot-high barriers spaced 4 inches apart to replace existing vehicle barriers, which the challengers say are generally permeable and do not block wildlife movement. The San Rafael Valley is a critical lifeline connecting imperiled jaguars and ocelots to vital breeding populations in Sonora, the lawsuit says. It also calls it a crucial corridor for other specials like black bears, pronghorn, mountain lions, white-tailed deer, mule deer, javelinas, coyotes, and bobcats, who rely on transboundary movement between to search for shelter, food, mates, and other vital resources. The Arizona Border Wall Project would essentially be the death knell for jaguars in the United States, eliminating over 50 years' worth of jaguar conservation efforts, Sue told the court. She also said that it would wipe out agency, organizational, and tribal efforts, leaving an irreplaceable void in the landscape that would be continuously felt by the communities who have lived beside them. Then there are factors ranging from erection of stadium lights to the use of water for concrete and dust suppression. Finally, wall construction is planned to traverse the Santa Cruz River twice, which requires installing concrete foundations that disturb water flows of this already imperiled river, Sue wrote. So she wants Martinez to declare that Congress acted illegally in giving NEEM total discretion to build what she wants without some guidance or limits on what laws the secretary gets to waive. Yoon, in his newly filed response, makes no reference to the future of the Jaguars if the wall is erected. In fact, his 24-page response to the lawsuit makes no mention of jaguars or any other animal at all. Instead, Yoon told the judge the case revolves around the law. He said the original 1996 law specifically required the Homeland Security Secretary to construct reinforced fencing along not less than 700 miles of the southwest border where fencing would be most practical and effective. Congress also gave the secretary the freedom to determine whether the placement of security items was the most appropriate means to achieve and maintain control over the international border, Yoon said. He acknowledged that the original statute limited the secretary to being able to override two specific laws, the Endangered Species Act and the National Environmental Policy Act. But Yoon said that has since been expanded to include all legal requirements. Yoon also said that Congress clearly wanted to expedite matters, creating a streamlined system of judicial review for any lawsuits challenging the secretary's authority. First, it gave the federal court exclusive jurisdiction over these challenges. Potentially more significant, it limited those challenges to allegations of a constitutional violation. And that's just part of it. He said legal challenges must be brought within 60 days, and the only way for someone unhappy with a trial judge's decision to seek review is to take the case to the U.S. Supreme Court. Yoon said NEEM did not pick the San Rafael Valley at random for the new barriers. The secretary chose these sections because she determined that the Tucson sector is an area of high illegal entry, with over 463,000 illegal aliens and thousands of pounds of illegal drugs apprehended in 2024, he told the judge. Beyond that, Yoon told Martinez there's no basis for the claim by the environmental groups that Congress, in giving NEEM that authority, had abdicated its role of prioritizing between competing values when it comes to border security. In fact, he argued, Congress did its job and told the secretary exactly what is the priority. By placing no limitations on the kinds of laws that may be waived, Congress prioritized border security over any other values, such as environmental concerns, Yoon said. This prioritization is a clear mandate from Congress. Construct barriers and roads at the border, and if another law impeded expeditious construction, the secretary may waive it. Anyway, he said, Congress did set meaningful boundaries on the authority given to NEEM. The first, said Yoon, is geographic, with her ability to waive various other laws only in connection with construction in the vicinity of the United States border. Second, he said, is that NEEM can issue waivers only when necessary to ensure expeditious construction at those locations. The ample guidance provided in the IIRIRA 1996 law is more than sufficient to constitute an intelligible principle and survive constitutional scrutiny, Yoon said. No date has been set for a hearing. My next article, there's a teen who was killed in a rollover crash in San Luis, two other injured. This article is by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer from September 9th. A 17-year-old driver was killed Tuesday afternoon in a single vehicle rollover crash in San Luis, Arizona. According to the San Luis Police Department, officers responded to the 2300 block of Los Alamos Street at approximately 1:39 p.m. for reports of a rollover. A preliminary investigation determined that a black 2014 Ford Mustang was traveling eastbound when the driver lost control. The vehicle left the roadway, entered the desert on the south side of the street, and overturned. The driver, whose identity has not been released, was pronounced dead at the scene. Next of kin has been notified. Two passengers were transported to Onvida Health in Yuma in stable condition. San Luis police said the cause of the crash remains under investigation. It is not yet known whether speed or alcohol played a role. Anyone with information related to the incident is encouraged to contact the San Luis Police Department at 928-341-2420 or call 78-CRIME to remain anonymous. Next, a father and a daughter were arrested in a homicide case and they appeared in court. This is by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer from September 9th. A father and daughter arrested in connection with the killing of a 24-year-old Yuma man made their initial court appearances Tuesday afternoon in Yuma Justice Court. Daniel Harris, 38, and his daughter, Danica Watts, 21, both of Yuma, are accused in the death of Michael Patrick Ryder, Harris's son and Watts' brother, following an investigation by the Yuma County Sheriff's Office. Harris appeared before Judge Gregory Stewart and was formally advised that he is being held on one felony count of first-degree murder per domestic violence. His bond was set at $1 million cash only. Stewart appointed the Yuma County Public Defender's Office to represent Harris. Watts faces two felony charges, one count of first-degree murder and one count of hindering prosecution. Her bond was set at $500,000. She was also assigned a public defender. Both defendants are scheduled to return to court Thursday, September 11th at 1 p.m. for arraignment, where they will learn whether the Yuma County Attorney's Office has filed a formal criminal complaint and, if any, what charges will be pursued. The investigation began late Friday, September 5th, when deputies responded to a report of an unresponsive male at a residence in the 800 block of South Almond Avenue in Yuma. Ryder was found with serious injuries and transported by Rural Metro paramedics to Oneida Health before being airlifted to a hospital in the Phoenix area. He later died from his injuries. The death, initially considered suspicious, was quickly classified as a homicide. The Yuma County Sheriff's Office Investigations Bureau has not released a motive or further details regarding the nature of Ryder's injuries. The investigation remains ongoing. Anyone with information related to the case is encouraged to contact YCSO. You're listening to Yuma Sun News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Here's a feel-good story for you. Vote now. Yuma's beloved canine Abby competes for Hero Dog Honors. This is by James Gilbert, Sun staff writer from September 9th. With her vision fading and her years of service behind her, Abby, the long-haired German Shepherd, now spends her days surrounded by her former handler's family, gently clutching her favorite toys like treasured prizes and basking in the warmth of home life. But not long ago, Abby was a fierce and loyal protector on the front lines of base security at Marine Corps Air Station Yuma. And now the community has a chance to show its appreciation. Abby has been named one of the top 25 semi-finalists in the 2025 American Humane Hero Dog Awards, and the Marines she served with at MCAS Yuma are trying to rally the community and the nation to cast their votes for her before the September 15th deadline. Once a dog is nominated, it's all about public voting, said Staff Sergeant Joseph Adams, Abby's former kennel master. Right now, Abby is one of the top finalists nationwide. The voting deadline is coming up quickly, so we're trying to get the word out and encourage as many people as possible to support her. Abby served honorably for 5 years and 8 months as a military working dog, retiring earlier this year on January 20th due to a chronic eye condition that impaired her ability to work. Despite facing health challenges, Abby's career has been nothing short of extraordinary, marked by a broad spectrum of operational achievements and public service contributions. She completed 73 authorized vehicle inspections, executed 65 random anti-terrorism measures, and participated in 18 building searches and 13 scouting missions. Her sharp detection skills led to 9 confirmed drug finds, and she provided over 300 health and comfort visits, offering reassurance and support in high-stress environments. Abby also showcased her capabilities at 10 air shows and 2 strongman competitions and performed more than 50 public demonstrations to highlight her training and effectiveness. Her commitment to collaboration was evident through countless cross-training exercises with the police departments and federal law enforcement agencies. In total, Abby logged over 5,613 hours of training and operational use, a testament to her dedication, versatility, and lasting impact. Military working dogs have a wide range of responsibilities, explained Corporal Johnny Embry, one of Abby's former handlers. Their mere presence acts as a psychological deterrent. Just seeing them can make someone with bad intentions think twice. Abby was trained in everything from basic obedience and obstacle courses to bite work and narcotics detection. She even apprehended the suspects. Although Abby was never deployed overseas, her impact at home was undeniable. She didn't deploy, but she played a crucial role on base, Embry said. Her presence here made a real difference. Adams nominated Abby for the Hero Dog Award without telling anyone at first. I nominated Abby myself, secretly, because I knew her health issues would likely force her into early retirement, he said. I wanted to make sure she was honored for everything she has done throughout her life. The award, Adams emphasized, is not solely a recognition of Abby's service. It's also a tribute to everyone who contributed to her journey, from her early training at Lackland Air Force Base to the many handlers who worked with her throughout her career. Each played a part in her success. Honoring Abby, he noted, is a way of honoring the entire team behind her. The Hero Dog Awards are now in their 15th year and honor exceptional canines in 5 categories: military, law enforcement, therapy, service, and emerging hero dogs. Winners will be announced later this year, and an official awards ceremony is expected, though changes to the format are still pending. The canine heroes represent courage, strength, and love, and their stories illustrate the uplifting, healing power of the human-animal sport bond, said Dr. Robin Ganzert, president and CEO of the American Humane Society. We look forward to sharing their stories with America and encourage all to vote for the heroes on both ends of the leash. Today, Abby lives with Embry, his wife, and their 2 children, with a 3rd on the way. She adapted to home life perfectly from day 1, Embry said. She's gentle with the kids and gets along with everyone. One of her quirks is that when she has a toy, she loves to spin in place. That's her joy, and I let her keep that. While the adjustment from military life to family life can be difficult for some working dogs, Abby's natural calm and deep bond with Embry made the transition seamless. She still wakes up ready to go to work, Embry said with a smile. So we're working on helping her relax and enjoy couch life. How to vote? The public is encouraged to vote for Abby, and that would be at www.americanhumane.org/hero-dog-awards. The deadline is September 15th. Now, Yuma has this opportunity to honor Abby. My obituaries today, I have 3 of them. Sabino Umberto Uyo Busani, 58 of Yuma, passed away on September 2nd in Yuma. He was a truck driver born in 1967 in Mexicali, Baja, California. Burial will be at Panteon Ejido Morelos, B.C. Arrangements were entrusted to and handled by Sanchez Dombrowski Funeral Home. Christopher Lee McCain, 49 of Yuma, passed away on September 2nd in Yuma. He was an inspector born in 1975 in Fort Bliss, Texas. Cremation and arrangements were entrusted to Sanchez Dombrowski Funeral Home. And finally, Javier Navarro Ochoa, 71 of Yuma, passed away August 29th in Yuma. He was a laborer born in 1951. Cremation and arrangements, Sanchez Dombrowski Funeral Home. Moving now to sports. The athlete of the week, San Pasqual wide receiver, defensive back Isaiah Martinez. This is by Mac Friday's sports editor from September 9th. Yuma County football teams did not fare well this past weekend, with only Gila Ridge coming away with a win. Despite poor results in the women column, there were still plenty of shining performances in between the lines across the state. Leading the performances with this week's choice of Athlete of the Week was San Pasqual senior receiver defensive back Isaiah Martinez, who showed out on both sides of the ball in a 52-34 loss at Kingman Academy. Martinez hauled in 10 catches for 225 yards and two touchdowns, leading all San Pasqual receivers in each category. Defensively, he led the team with 12 total tackles and two interceptions in the loss. Martinez is by far and away the most talented player on the field for the Warriors. On offense, he led the team with 49 receptions for 639 yards and five touchdowns during the 2024 season. He also led the team in tackles on defense with 70 last year. In 2025, Martinez has already half of his season totals from last season and over a third of his defensive totals. Isaiah's a once-in-a-lifetime athlete, Rivas said, but somebody else is going to have to step up so we can take the pressure off of him. Elsewhere, Gila Ridge senior defensive tackle Drew Caudill had a monster week along the line of scrimmage, recording three sacks, four tackle for loss, and five tackles total. GR senior receiver Gabriel Cota also had a strong showing, recording nine catches for 144 yards and three scores. The Hawks play the Buckeyes at home on Friday, while the Warriors visit Santa Rita on Thursday. The Athlete of the Week recap, August 18th through 22nd, Ozzie Martin, August 25th to 29th, Daniel Sainz, and September 1st through 6th, Isaiah Martinez. My next article, and I don't have much time left, but Shamrocks dance to a 3-0 start. This is by Max Friday, sports editor. Yuma Catholic Volleyball is off to a strong start to its 2025 campaign, winning all three of the first matches against nearby California schools. The Shamrocks added another win on Tuesday night, beating Imperial 6-7, 3-2, 25-20, 24-26, 20-25, 25-16, and 15-9. Sophomore outside hitter Peyton Enders led the way with 16 kills, three solo blocks, and two aces. And that's what I have time for today. I hope you've gotten something worthwhile out of this. The Wall Street Journal is next. I hope you can stay with us.